This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com, live here inside the web studio. Ira's in the MDN studio, and it is time for the MGoBlog Roundtable, 9 o'clock hour every single Thursday. We are joined by the MGoBlog crew in their respective studios across the greater Ann Arbor area. Starting off first with Brian Cook in the MGoBlog studio. Brian, how are you?
Good. It's just the only room in my house with no children in it.
Seth in the satellite MGoBlog studio. How are you?
I'm good. This room has a lock on it.
and Craig Ross, who, if you are looking for Craig Ross on Twitter, he is not Faux Craig. There's a Craig Ross Twitter account that is at Faux Craig. That is not the real Craig Ross. Is that right, Craig?
I think that's right, since I've never been on Twitter, but I've been told that it's quite amusing. And so I give him, whoever's doing it, him or her, probably him, carte blanche to say whatever he wants and keep being funny.
So. Yeah, I hear you. So, guys, obviously no laughing matter that Michigan had to cancel the Ohio State game this week. I imagine that all of you guys kind of saw that coming. So let's get into your reaction to the press conference about the decision. Kirk Herbstreit's comments leading into it. What did you make of that whole scene, and what were your biggest takeaways, starting with you, Brian, from the press conference talking about the decision-making on it?
Well, I was disappointed that they canceled because I thought Kirk Herbstreit should have to play quarterback for Michigan and Pennants. Just that seemed like the right level of
– I don't know. He hasn't won many games in Ohio State, Michigan.
I know, but I mean, Michigan was going to be pretty shorthanded at quarterback, mm-hmm. So I thought it would work out for everybody. But the yeah. press conference you're referring to is the one where Ward was talking about how he was going to talk to Harbaugh after the season.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I think a lot of people are reacting to stuff that wasn't said in that press conference. So Ward's like, I talk to him on a regular basis. We're shooting things back and forth. It's not like this is a decision that we're just going to make off the cuff in 2 weeks, mm-hmm. but you know, he said that, you know, we're going to talk about it later. And since I would assume that this bonus game is probably not going to get played anywhere except the Northwestern Ohio State game, that they could have announced something now. And I know you posted something on your message board to the effect of, you know, before I thought that this was going to be an extension, and now the longer this goes, the less likely I think that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think that, as I said, and I need to be clear with my words, because someone said, you said recruiting isn't a priority. I didn't say that. I said recruiting clearly is not their top priority. And I don't know how you could come to any other conclusion if, in the avoidance of any level of assurance, no, we're going to get this done at the end of the season. No, we intend to make this happen. Nothing in the way of affirming, you know, the vibe that's being given off to the recruits by the coaches. They didn't do any of that in that press conference. And there are ways that you can make that statement without, you know, offering a guarantee. And they chose not to mitigate any of the negative recruiting. That's not by accident, Craig. It's not a missed opportunity. Jim Harbaugh has been a head coach how many years, has been in negotiations before, understands the effect on recruiting. Ward Manuel navigated UConn through the Jim Calhoun escorting him out the door. They know how things will be interpreted and perceived, and they chose not to do that. That tells me that is strategic. So I'm leaving open the possibility that, like Brian said, they're having these informal discussions. I'm leaving open the possibility that there could be something that happens here before the early signing period. But if nothing happened and they truly do get to this after the season, then that will tell me, that would suggest to me that both sides are looking to see where this goes in the way of what other options are available.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, we're dealing with very smart people here. And you said right from the beginning, Sam, that this has to get done or needs to be done, ideally, as quickly as possible, and preferably before the 16th, which I think is signing day. And I think that was right, and I think probably Manuel and Harbaugh recognize that. And I think it's also correct that there have been at least informal discussions about what the term of a new contract would be. That seems undeniable. I mean, because these are smart people who know what they're doing. And so what this all means to me is their informal discussions have shown that it isn't going to be all that easy to come up with a deal, because otherwise it would be easy for them to say, no, we have a deal. It's just we got to work out the details.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the details could even be a million here, a million there. Right. But since we're not hearing that, it seems pretty clear to me there's some major differences between what the athletic department wants, that is Ward Manuel, and what Jim Harbaugh wants. To me, this remains a complete uncertainty. There's about four possible ways they can go. I think Wojo in the news outlined them fairly well. But what do you think, Seth? I mean, do you see this differently, or Brian, than I do? I mean, it seems.
You guys pretty much have it. I mean, obviously, if they care that much about if recruiting was going to be the number one priority, if they're operating like an Ohio State or something like that, who's like, okay, football program first, and then we'll figure out the rest, they would have a decision made already. I also think if Harbaugh wanted a contract that was incentive laden, or Harbaugh wanted to like keep coaching here for 3 years, and just get less if he has the same kind of success he's had, then he would have signed that contract already. He would have come weeks ago and said, look, this is screwing up recruiting. I want to fix it. I want to be here. I want to make sure that I'm in charge, you know, that I'm going to get Michigan where I said I would, and I believe in myself enough. Give me a contract that pays me what I'm getting now if I hit those marks, and if I don't, then whatever. I'm not going to die from a little bit less money. If that's how he felt right now, I think that's where he would be. If he was looking for the NFL, if he was looking for an exit route, or if he believed that he needs to be paid what he's being paid now, or he's not going to do the job, then that's where he would be right now. So I think it's kind of in Harbaugh's ballpark at this point, because the program, like you said, they have a talent buyout. What are they going to do about that? And they don't want to screw over Harbaugh if they can avoid it. They don't want to, you know, look like a terrible job. They don't want to look like a team that fires a guy on the tarmac. So they're kind of stuck.
I mean, I think that there's a good reason for the athletic department to wait if the decision is actually to make a move. And that's if you can have an NFL team come in and hire Jim Harbaugh, then you don't have to pay his buyout. And if that's the case, then, you know, waiting is a reasonable thing to do, especially because you've got one main candidate on the board, I think, in Matt Campbell. And who else is in the market for a coach right now? Like USC's 4-0. They're not going to fire Clay Helton. You've got South Texas. It looks like they took a swing at Meyer, and now they're talking like they might keep Herman. And that just kind of shows you how much pressure athletic departments are under because of coronavirus. Because Texas has more money than God, and they have a $25 million buyout, which is more punitive than Michigan's. But if they put Tom Herman in that situation and then don't make a move, I don't think that's something that's happened in college football since I've been following it. So if you're able to, you know, have kind of a velvet divorce here and ship Jim Harbaugh off to a head job in the NFL and then spend all your money on getting your new coach, I think that's worth the wait, especially because, you know, there is going to be an early signing period and you're going to be able to at least hold on to most of your guys until they can meet the new guy, if that is the direction they're actually.
Yeah, that was kind of my point. I mean, I think it should be noted that when the sky is falling, takes come, that the sky isn't completely falling. You have a contingent of the recruiting class that is adamant that it will come regardless of who the coach is.
Yeah.
That they are locked in. They are committed to Michigan. Now, just so happens that a couple of the higher profile guys are wavering a bit due to the what had been at least perceived uncertainty. They've legitimized that uncertainty with the silence on the matter, or not addressing it publicly. But I think that the way you should interpret that is, they understand what's at stake And that is acceptable to them if it means that they can further explore these options that we're talking about. You get to the last game of the NFL regular season is January 3rd. The New Year's Day bowl games are wrapping up around then. So, you know, I don't think that this is a scenario where, you know, you're wasting time. I don't think they're wasting time with one another. They have these informal discussions. If you're Jim Harbaugh, and I'm just role playing. But if you're Jim Harbaugh, if I'm Jim Harbaugh, I'm putting some feelers out to the NFL to try to gauge interest right now. If I'm Michigan, I'm also working my contingency as well. I'm starting to work the back channel. I'm starting to check on different scenarios. I'm starting to check on Matt Campbell. I'm starting to check on Tony Elliott. I'm starting to check on Chris Peterson. These are all things that you can be doing behind the scenes right now. That if they hadn't started or if they haven't started already, I'm assuming these are the kinds of moves that you're making. Understanding that, like you said, look, if they could say this is gonna get done, they would have said this is gonna get done. No one's saying that you gotta right now get a contract signed, but to give the impression that it is on the verge of happening is beneficial to recruiting. And I don't see how you can't take a message away from them not doing that.
Yeah, I agree with that, you know, with that completely, that if they really thought it was going to be, at least if it was either done in principle or it could get done, they would have announced it and details could come later. And so there's a problem, you know, and the other problem is what happens if they can't come to grips with each other? What happens if they can't cut a deal? Then the only alternative is maybe the worst alternative for everybody, or not for Harbaugh perhaps, but it's the worst alternative for Michigan, which is he goes on next year, takes his $7 million, and they can't recruit, and they have no interest in recruiting, and you know the season plays out, and Michigan hires someone at the end of next year after another not so good year.
I'm sorry, we're not the first program to ever be in that situation, because there's a lot of programs out there who don't have more money than God. And the way they handle situations like this is they hire the next coach as a coordinator for a year, and then that guy takes over. So if there's somebody out there that we want to be the head coach, not a Matt Campbell of, but if there's somebody out there who's, you know, a hot up-and-comer, it's too bad Gattis hasn't proven himself to that level, because that'd be kind of like one of those guys. But that's what you do. You find a guy, put him in the coordinator role for a year and say, look, you know, old man's running out his contract down there. and you're the guy, and you're going to recruit knowing you're the guy, and people are going to know you're the guy. That's really your option in that situation.
But it's an interesting idea, but has that ever happened before?
Yeah, it happened at Kansas State. Wisconsin, yeah.
Yeah, and West Virginia, too. Right. Although I think they – no, because somebody took Holgo. They hired Holgerson to be that, and then he got
so if you,
hired
if you
away.
Saw, if you saw them hire a $2 million coordinator, then – there you have it. Exactly. That's what that is.
But if they get a coordinator who seems beyond their capabilities as a coordinator for a, you know, a sinking ship, mm-hmm. right? Like if you're a coordinator right now and you know, you know, Jim Harbaugh is coaching in the last year of his contract, and you take that job and he's a high profile guy who like had high coaching offers, you know.
Okay. All right. That doesn't seem like that's the likely way this plays out.
I don't think so either. I mean, what do you think is a likely playoff, Brian?
I mean,
a likely playoff.
I mean, if I had to guess right now, Michigan kind of plays it cool until Harbaugh announces an NFL job, and then they go get Campbell. Because, I mean, there was a report from, I think, Dennis Dodd, who said that the only jobs that Campbell was interested in were Notre Dame and Ohio State, which was vehemently denied by Jordan Strack, who's a TV sports reporter in Toledo, so who knows Campbell personally. Yeah. So I take that as a sign that he would take the job if it was offered.
Yeah, and I think that we should be very leery of thinking that they are hyper focused on one guy. I think that I actually think that they would be very thorough in looking at a bunch of different options. I definitely think that Chris Peterson is a door that would be knocked on to gauge interest. And I do not think that, you know, it would be off the table to consider the highest profile coordinators out there, guys that you couldn't get, guys that you just couldn't hire as a coordinator at this point, guys that you know are going to be head coaches next year, if not in the not too distant future.
I mean, who are those guys, though?
Yeah. You got Tony Elliott's a guy like that. Brady's a guy like that.
Jim Leonard,
guy like that. So I mean, they're like that.
I mean, I would find it hard to believe that if Matt Campbell does want to come, that any coordinator could possibly match his accomplishments at Iowa State. He has the first conference title for Iowa State since 1912. You know, he's an Ohio guy. He's been a head coach for some 10 years now. He's, I think, only 41 too. So he's like. It's hard for me to imagine that any search that asks the right questions will come up with any answer except Matt Campbell.
I'm not convinced that it definitely would be him. I certainly think he would be absolutely in the mix. But I think that whatever you do, whether it's Harbaugh and, you know, retooling his staff, Harbaugh signing an extension and retooling his staff, or Michigan making this move, you know, after Jim takes an NFL job, whatever route they go, at the apex of the consideration has to be, you have got to get a titanic recruit, a titan in the game, a guy who has recruiting chops that will help you bridge the competitive gap that's out there, because other teams cheat. They buy guys. They have regional advantages. Who is going to help you balance that scale the best? That has got to be, it has to absolutely be primary in the consideration. Get you an unbelievable recruiter. And that doesn't mean that he could be an X's and O's neophyte, have no, you know, skill in that department whatsoever. But I can't imagine that you are going to be, you know, considering guys like that.
Like, who is that, though? Who is that?
Mack Brown.
Mack Brown, yeah. That's who came to mind, but too. But, you know, Mack Brown isn't pure as the driven snow, right? Like, I just.
Yeah.
Like, if we're talking about Tony Elliott, who's at Clemson, like, how do we judge Tony Elliott's recruiting at Clemson?
He's an unbelievable recruiter.
I know, but how do we judge that in like, at Michigan? If, like, I feel like.
I think a guy who can recruit like that. And a guy who
recruit like that when you're handing out bags left and right, like. Yeah,
but this is a different kind of cat. This isn't your average football, you know, just football guy. This is an industrial engineer coaching football.
All right, now I'm more interested. But also, he's only been the full fledged offensive coordinator for 1 year.
This is where you talk to other coaches. This is,
I don't.
You dig deep into the. The resources that you should have in the profession to really tell you, all right, what are this guy's coaching chops? But at the end of the day, I mean, if you felt like he had major deficiencies as a play caller, then don't have your head coach call plays. You know, hire some guys that can do that. Get a titanic recruiter. I can't say enough. I mean, it's not like Michigan's recruited poorly. Don't take what I'm saying that way. But I'm saying, if you are going to make a change away from Jim Harbaugh, where do you go from Jim Harbaugh? There wasn't a more perfect hire than Jim Harbaugh that I've seen in the last 10, 15 years. So if it is the case that he goes on to the NFL, and I'm throwing an if on there, I'm not saying that is definitely on the horizon. But if it is, where do you go beyond him? What's the next level? And the best thing that I can come up with to bridge the gap is you take your recruiting up to another level, a level beyond where it is right now. So that's whether Jim signs an extension and retools. I think you got to do that with that in mind, rather than Bob Shue, you know, Dante Williams. Recruiting, recruiting, recruiting.
Yeah, but I just don't feel like that, you know, when push comes to shove, you know, Isaiah Wilson, the giant tackle Michigan was after, is a first rounder after going to Georgia. Like, he got paid, and if Michigan's not going to pay, they're still not going to get Isaiah Wilson. Like, I feel like the organization that might be able to bring Michigan some sucker here is Congress.
So you're thinking, what you're saying is that it's impossible to have a Juwan Howard on the football side of things, and I don't think that's the case. I think you can have a Juwan Howard on the football side of things. It's hard, It's not easy.
Yeah, but there's no Juwan Howard out there. You could tell that when Juwan Howard was hired and LeBron James and Dwayne Wade were shouting him out, that this dude was going to be a recruiter.
You're going to have there are coaches out there that you have pros shouting out.
Not like LeBron James.
Well, I mean, he's the best player in the game, right? I mean, of course, no, not LeBron James, but they're
even if you know Tom Brady comes down from heaven as like, I bless this hire, it doesn't have the same impact as this guy was in the Fab Five. He was in the league for 19. He's the one of the assistant coaches at one of the best run franchises in the NBA. You know, getting some from the NFL historically has been a disaster for college football. And if you're looking at a college coordinator, there's just no way they're going to have the stature in the game that Juwan Howard has in basketball.
Well, I guess I am talking to coaches in the game about who the next guys might be. I'm not as convinced that I don't mean to sell you a dream like it would be easy. But if you put at the head of the snake an outstanding recruiter and have at every step below him guys where that is the, you know, that is a primary attribute that is counted as one of their strengths. It's the best chance you have of bridging the talent gap. Now that doesn't mean don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Matt Campbell wouldn't be a good coach or a good candidate. I'm just saying that he's not I don't think he's the only guy they would consider, nor do I think he should be.
Well, I mean, here's why I like Matt Campbell, among other reasons. I don't think he's recruited any 4-stars.
He's had four.
Yeah. And so he's mostly doing it with under the radar guys. And I mean, he's not obviously the Juwan Howard of the football world. I mean, Juwan Howard is an unusual person to say the least. I mean, you can't say enough about the power of his personality. But you know what? Maybe Matt Campbell is the John Beilein of the football world. And that's been my beef with Michigan to some extent is I don't think they've been sufficiently curious, in evaluating guys they brought in some guys, Haskins, Bell, are guys that were under the rocks guys, but there's thousands of these under the rocks guys out there who succeed, and Campbell seems to be finding them, and Michigan hasn't.
One thing that I like about Campbell is that he developed a defense called the broken stack, which is a 3-3-3, so you have three deep safeties, and you get to insert those guys into the box randomly. And this has been adopted by much of the Big 12 as kind of an anti-spread device. And so that's why they're competitive with Oklahoma, is they have this approach that's really good for modern football, that they've adapted it to the various necessities they have, and they run it, and they have an identity to it. So I feel like that really speaks to his coaching acumen. I just can't see Michigan passing on a guy with a decade of successful head coaching experience for any coordinator.
Well, you just raised the point, though. If you said passing on, I mean, how much does it cost Michigan to get him? And do we have any inclination at all? I mean, that he would come to Michigan. We have the guy down in Toledo.
I don't think there's any question that he would come.
His buyout's $6 million, so it would take a chunk of change to do it. But, even if you're talking about Brent Venables, who I just don't think is a head coach in Canada, because otherwise he'd be a head coach somewhere. Like, he's a guy who is probably the best defensive coordinator in the game right now.
I think those guys are paid so well that they can be very discerning.
Well, and he's got two kids on the Clemson team too, so you know it's a situation where I don't think he's available. Even if Brent Venables was available, I don't know how you would justify hiring him over a guy like Campbell.
Yeah, to me, like I said, what I'm looking at is not making I'm not ready to make the concession that Michigan is never going to be able to recruit at the level of the cheaters. Certainly understand that is a daunting task on its face, but I think if you have the right profile, the right recruiting profile, that it can be done. You certainly can't have any gaps as far as you know, recruiting in your hierarchy and in your structure. I mean, everybody has to have that as a strength if you're going to recruit on that level. But if you do, if you have that, I still think it's possible. Maybe I'm naive in that way.
I mean, I think you see a program that does that in Penn State, and that's where Penn State's where Penn State is. And I'm not talking about this year. I'm talking about like kind of their overall program vibe, right? Where like, you know, Franklin hires guys because they have hot wives because that means they're a good recruiter. Like, that's their program philosophy, and they're a pretty good program, but they're not on par with Ohio State.
Yeah. I want to point out something. You know, we bring up Penn State, like, and you know, the negative recruiting and like where it's coming from, something like that. If you're a recruit and you have an opportunity to sign on to a team that is going through a transition, it's counterintuitive, but it's actually probably a good bet for you. Like the guys who signed on to the 2011 team, the 2015 team, 2008 team, those guys played. And I'm not just talking about the guys who were recruited by the coaches who were coming in. The guys like, you know, Tyree Cannell and Caron Higdon or whatever. A lot of the guys that came get a lot of playing opportunity. You sign on to a program that needs players, you're going to get an opportunity to play early, and you're going to get a lot of opportunities down the road, too. It's just happened time and again. I can use our program as an example. I can use other programs as examples, too. So if you're telling these guys, like, you know, you don't know which coach you're signing on to, you commit to your position coach. That's what let's say the guy you're going to be working with, not the head coach anyway. And the other things you care about are you going to be winning? Well, that's a major consideration. And the other is, like, you know, do you like the school? So these recruits who are being told, hey, you don't even know if Harbaugh's going to be there or not, I think they're getting bad advice, man.
We got to get to a break. We'll pick this up on the other side, get some basketball in the mix as well here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK Ticket. And we are back here on the Michigan Insider, WTKA, online at WTKA.com. Just talking about possibilities. And I guess for me, to wrap this discussion up before we switch gears, I feel like if nothing happens, you know, in the next week or so, I don't expect anything to happen with the extension or anything that could be going on that has to do with Michigan's head coaching job in a formal way. I don't think we'll see anything until after the new year. What do you guys think?
After the new year? Wow. I mean, if that's the case, there's some point at which it seems like a foregone you're going to have that seems I'm like Mr. Extended Timeline, and that even kind of shocked me.
Yeah, if they don't, I mean, if you're gonna go through the early signing period, why wouldn't you wait for the end of the college season and the pro season when those pro jobs are where more pro jobs might come open at that point or will come open?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
You know, for me, if they can't reach a deal, I mean, I think the string probably gets played out because I don't see how Michigan can afford to terminate Jim Harbaugh, pay the theoretical Matt Campbell $6 million. That's $13 million. Hire in a new staff in a year when they're already losing doesn't seem plausible. So to me, they either A, work out a deal, B, Harbaugh goes to the C, they limp along with him next year and see how it goes. I don't think there's any because I don't think they can afford.
Just have a plan. Just have if you're going to go till January, have your money lined up, have your candidates lined up, know exactly where you're going, who you want to talk to, in what order, and get it done quickly. Because the last thing you want to do is have another 2015 or 2011, when, you know, you go through a process for a couple when you hire Hoke, he's got no time to put a class together.
All right, let's switch gears, guys, and go over to the basketball side of things where, you know, the Wolverines, they had a scare against Oakland that knocked them out of the top 25, but they look pretty good since then. I mean, definitely Big Hunter is looking like, look, put it this way. He has his way with teams that don't have anyone that can match his size, and doesn't matter if you throw 2-3 guys at him, he'll go right through. He was going right through guys last night, and really, really impressive to see the start to his career. Now the next test is going to be as he goes up against anyone that can match him physically. He's going to see that in Big Ten Conference.
Yeah, he is. Go ahead.
I was going to say it might not be that often because you're looking at Garza, you're looking at the
Garza can't play.
Yeah, but he's like big enough.
I mean, Garza's terrible on defense.
I know, but like I'm talking both ends.
Right.
There's, okay. Like, I feel like there's going to be a lot of points.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at Kofi Coburn, and you're looking at maybe Wisconsin Bigs, who are good defenders, but maybe not having the size to really go up against Dickinson. And then the rest of the league is kind of like, I don't know, is how many of those good defensive centers are still around? So I think you could be looking at a season where Hunter Dickinson is, I don't know, the third team all Big Ten center. I think Coburn and Garza have the top two slots locked up. I don't see him slowing down that much.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. A couple of things that I just love is it isn't just that Juwan can recruit. I'm becoming more and more convinced he and the staff can actually coach. And because you saw the game they were behind early. UCF, yeah, thanks. They were running drop coverage. It wasn't working. UCF was making those little 13, 15-foot pull-ups, and he switched. He went right into soft hedging, end of game, and end of game for UCF, and so I was impressed with that. I've been impressed with what he's done on defense generally. With the if you watch the footwork from Franz Wagner, markedly improved. His hands have improved. You see, you watch Michigan playing defense. They're using their feet first, hands second, which isn't all that common, even at high level basketball. And that's a change, particularly with Wagner. I mean, Shondi Brown is just tremendous at this. I mean, sometimes he even taunts the opposition in a weird way by putting his hands his back, which is something when he's guarding a guy, which is something I've never seen before, even though it's really, really smart because you can feel what's behind and it forces you to move your feet first and then adjust with hands later. And so I've been just blown away by what I've seen this year. Now, I don't know how good this team is. I don't know if they can compete with Michigan State and Illinois, who are obviously loads and very, 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 but I think they're going to compete with most teams out there, and they're going to play hard and smart. And the other thing is, I don't see much selfishness. I don't see a lot of bad shots being taken. I see the ball moving around the court. Turnovers, which were a problem early, I think they had 8 tonight. And I'm not saying Toledo is Illinois, but Toledo isn't a bad team. Toledo lost by 3 to Xavier, who just cranked Oklahoma last, like 22. And so Xavier is the deal, and Toledo played them pretty even. In fact, they did play them even until the last minute. So I think you got to say, hey, this coaching staff knows what they're doing. This team is unselfish and rooting for each other, and they're fun to watch. And I'm, regardless of what the results are over the rest of the year, I'm truly heartened by what this particular team looks like. I don't know what you guys think, but I'm really happy with it.
Seth, go ahead.
Can Seth hear it? Can you hear us?
I
can
only, oh, I didn't know. I saw Stan and Brian start talking. I was like, oh, I'll go third. Then. I think that they're. I agree with Craig. You know, a little bit concerned that some of the moms of recruits and players, or a mom of a recruit and player, I guess should say, says she's beefing with coach already. It would be Janine Howard tweeting out last night that she's mad that her son's not getting more playing.
Okay.
Other than that, I don't see any problems on the team. Mike Smith's defense is a little questionable. I don't want to see them try more Eli at the point so they can get Sean D out there more often. But I, you know, he knows what he's doing with the lineups. Like, I can't even criticize the way he plays Davis to start, because like that gives you a different look, and Michigan kind of hacks it for a while, and then Dickinson comes in after, like, you know, soften them up and they've got. And then Michigan always goes on like a 10-2 run every single time they insert him. And then he plays most of the game anyway. So it's not like he's not starting. It's just he's not officially starting. But I would like to see them kind of, especially when the Big Ten comes and facing some of these teams that are better drivers. Like Toledo can't drive, right? Like they shoot threes. And the reason they were in the Xavier game was because they can shoot threes, and they hit a lot of them that night. So when you face, like, you know, some of these other teams, you're going to need guys who can defend guards. And, you know, I think Eli is your better player overall in that scenario, especially because it puts Chandi on the floor.
Well, I think this is a little bit of Mike Smith disrespect
hour.
I like Mike Smith.
I just don't.
You gotta look at the quality of shots Michigan is getting up when Mike Smith is on the floor. I think Craig is absolutely right that this team is currently playing very, very pretty basketball. And Mike Smith being able to orchestrate and get people in the right position, kind of initiate those actions, is very, very helpful. So there are going to be matchups where I think Brooks and Shundy on the floor is the right answer, unless Mike Smith is getting torched. And he's not really getting torched enough to move the needle here. He's a very big part of it. When you have Dickinson on the floor, I think you can get away with having Eli because he provides you a lot of playmaking from the center. But it's weird that the two guys who you kind of look at as, well, maybe they're not the best defensive players, are a little handcuffed to each other. But that's where we are right now.
Talking about Austin and
Mike Smith, but that's yeah. It is what it is. When Michigan's not going to have the full Death Star roster.
Right. I have been blown away by Shondi Brown as a
We have this segment on our podcast where we come up with hot takes, and my hot take was that Shondi Brown was basically the equivalent of Josh Christopher. He's going to be a much better defender. And who would you rather have for 1 year?
Oh, not even a question. Shondi Brown. Mm-hmm. Not even a question.
But shooting like that, there's no way. And I give Juwan Howard all the credit. He shoot like this. They were like the only one. them and Randolph Childress were like the only ones, because you couldn't tell it from the stat that told you that he was going to be this kind of shooter. And that's a small sample space, and it is marred by 1-for-10 against Oakland. But look at the other games, guys, and I mean, he's in a sack when he's out there, and you know he can put it on the floor. We started seeing him put it on the floor a little bit more last night. But if a consistent three-point shooter in the high 30s, you know, low 40s, wow. And that he is comfortable doing it off the bench. That's the other thing. I mean, a guy who has pro aspiration, not being an issue, not having an issue with coming off the bench, I think is one of the stories for them of their development in this early season, that's something that he seems totally fine at, and not just fine with, I mean, he's thriving in that role.
Yeah, Scratch Barbecue and Catering had a tweet where they said it looked like he's just escaped from Shawshank. That's how happy he is.
That was such a great line, because he is. I mean, he's just happy on the court. And here's my hot take, and that's, I think he's as good or maybe even a better defender than Charles. I mean, he can D up. And he moves, the dude moves his feet all the time. And it's become infectious on this team, because last year you saw Franz, who was a guy who sort of didn't really move his feet that well in defense, to a guy who really is moving.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm ready to say he's a better defender than Charles. He might be better all around, to your point, because he's more versatile offensively than Charles.
Oh yeah, for sure. He's a better shooter.
Better shooter, and he's a good enough defender for you to say, hey, he could very well be a better all around player than Charles Matthews. I don't know about better defender yet. I don't know what you.
I'm not touching Charles Matthews in defense. I think the biggest difference is Charles Matthews never had a wing playing opposite him with arms like Franz Wagner, let alone having Livers in there and Dickinson in there at the same time. Like, when you've got that lineup in, there are just arms for days. Like, there is nowhere to go with the ball. Because, I mean, everybody, you know, except for the point guard at that point, you know, even if you beat them off the dribble, they're reaching those hands back there. If you get under the basket, it's just, you know, so many hands higher than you can jump. It's just it's amazing when you add his length to the rest of the team, how hard it looks to get anything in his defense.
Can you put Brett Gibbler's comment up there, Ira? This is maybe the best comparison that I've seen. I like that. I like that one.
He does physically look like Michael Finley.
I see some game similarities, at least from what this small sample speaks.
If he can maintain the shooting level, isn't he a second round pick? He's an NBA 3-and-D guy. Yeah. If he's able to shoot like this,
and I think it's important that we qualify it that way, because it changes, man. You were wondering from a scoring standpoint, shouldering the load we expected for it to be Franz and Isaiah. And Isaiah, for the most part, has been able to do that this year. Franz has been kind of iffy.
Franz has been iffy. I mean, I think Franz has actually improved this year in his offensive game because he's been much more careful with in terms of the shots he's taken. And he understands the team he's on, and he hasn't forced very much, a couple of balls, but he hasn't forced a lot this year. And to me, that's the whole thing about basketball. It's a game of synergy. It's a game of five people playing together. It's a game of making sure you get the best possible shot, the best
I guess if you had sort of cast this, remove the names, who would you have expected to have the offensive production that Shondi Brown is having right now? I would have thought that would have been Franz.
Well, Franz had a tough start,
but he's been coming on.
His last three games, O ratings of 179, 139, 146.
Yeah,
he had 8 assists, 2 turnovers.
Yep.
And he's just, you know, I think he's getting to a place where he's probably not going to have the usage we thought he was, but that's most of Michigan to have that. He's going to come along and maybe come in a notch or two below expectations, but largely because of the rest of
Yeah, and I wonder, I think it's important to keep qualifying like you, Brian, if he continues to shoot that way, because, man, if he does, wow, what it does for Michigan. And I look around the Big Ten and want to get you guys' thoughts on this. Been very impressed with Michigan State. How could you not be?
Yeah.
What they've been able to do and the guys that have been able to step up for them. Rocket Watts, of course, stepping to the fore this year. Aaron Henry seems to be more ready for the magnitude of his role. Hauser has been a big lift, and I think their most talented player is Marble. But I look over at Illinois, guys, and you mentioned them, Craig.
Yeah,
you see how Illinois is shooting the basketball right now?
I'm
not able to maintain it, but wow, I just didn't see that coming.
Well, it's in part because of Adam Miller. Adam Miller is he really can play. And you put him on a team with DeSonyu and Frazier. That's a real team. And they just clocked the other night. I think they beat him by pushing 20, 19 maybe. Is that about 15? Okay. At Cameron, at non-Cameron or whatever these days. And so they're a very, very good team. And they're going to be hard for anyone, including Michigan State. But Michigan State is also a really, really good team. So those are the and you saw the Big Ten did very well in the challenge. I think they were 6-1 two nights ago. I don't know what they were last month.
They lost all four.
They lost all four.
Northwestern, hilarious.
Yeah. The Big Ten has looked pretty good. I mean, every game is going to be tough. Penn State is not a sitter by any stretch of the imagination. That's a good team coming up.
Adam Miller is the deal. Trent Frazier is shooting at extremely high clips. His guy, DeMonte Williams, is shooting like 70% from three. I mean, they got a lot of guys. Even Ayudumu is shooting over 40% from three-point range right now. So it's like, man, if they shoot like that, then my pick moves from Wisconsin to Illinois. I just mean, and when I say like that, I don't mean shooting at 43-point range. They aren't going to maintain that. But if they can shoot as a team in the high 30s, at least, they become my favorite at that point if they can make.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that Duke is kind of butt this shit. It's kind of because they look like it, right? They don't look like Duke. You know, they just kind of feel like they're okay. They their opener was a 10-point win over Coppin State, and they've had like these two clonkings on the behalf of two Big Ten teams, and they haven't really played anyone else of note. So you know, I think
Coach K says he doesn't want to play the rest of the season.
This doesn't seem like a good omen for the Duke Blue Devils.
Hey guys, real quick, because we only got a couple of minutes left. Obviously, on the hockey side of things, come back down to earth. A lot of penalties of late. Obviously, they've lost more than they won of late. What do you guys make of that, real quick?
Well, I mean, you're missing 5 players weekend because of the World Juniors. Minnesota is missing 3 all defensemen, though, so their forward core was intact, while Michigan was missing all of their centers, almost literally. So it's a situation where you go into these games, and they seem pretty even 5-on-5, which is a good sign. But then Michigan's taking too many men penalties. They're taking offensive zone penalties pretty frequently. And then Michigan isn't getting any calls on the other end of the ice. So clean up the penalties, and then the special teams balance out. You're going to have a much. Also, I just think Minnesota will miss. They're like a year ahead of Michigan in this kind of transition. They have guys coming back from last year who are highly touted guys who are second year. So the Notre Dame series, I feel, was just kind of a Notre Dame series. And then these last 3 games are cause for concern. But I want to see what things look like when you have the full team and you've had some time to sort of reassess where we're at and get better quicker.
Yeah, I think the last three last three games have been 15 power plays against three power plays for.
Yeah.
And that's just not sustainable for any hockey. Yeah. And so we'll see how it goes when the season starts up, what they look like when they have an act. I'm optimistic.
All right. That'll do it for us today. It's always an absolute blast on the MGO Blog Roundtable. You can find these guys on MGOblog.com. We're working on getting Craig on Twitter. It may happen. Huge undertaking. Harder than hiring a coach, right? You're going to get Craig there. I'll get Craig there. I promise you. That'll do it for us, folks. All right.
Better than I